Hello and welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide essays, speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And I just want to give a big thanks to Spain. You took a leap of faith at the beginning of COVID and started this speaker meeting. It's been such a blessing to be able to hear folks and meet folks, especially meet women from around the world. My name is Nancy. I'm a sexaholic, and I'm absolutely addicted to lust. Little bit about my background. I don't remember a time when I did not masturbate. It probably wasn't until high school that I realized that there was sexual feelings involved, and I also began then to use violence towards myself, which increased through my marriage until I was 39 years old. Little bit of exhibitionism, some voyeurism, a little bit of pornography. Thankfully, it came in prior to internet and didn't even use a computer until I was like secretary of intergroup. So I'm grateful, grateful, grateful that I have not used pornography on the internet. So when I was 39 years old, I was extremely suicidal, and I got to where I would masturbate and then feel suicidal, which my guess is that's not most people's reaction. I'm guessing most people do masturbate. You know, you walk down the street, you take a survey, but most people are not going to say that they feel like killing themselves afterwards. So I landed in a psych hospital, and I was a very depressed person, but when I started to come out of it, by the way, I have no idea what I'm going to say. God, I just feel very strongly about God leading. I saw this list of things on the wall, 12 things. I had never heard of 12 step. And I'm reading this and I'm thinking, what a great way to live. And it happened, one of the therapists heard me and she said, well, we've got a group like that. Oh, that's great. So I went and she goes, well, why are you here? Well, this is a great way to live. I want to learn this way to live. And I came again. They let me come again. And she asked me again, why are you here? And for some reason, it clicked. I may never have this chance again. And I said, I don't remember how I said it, but essentially that I'm a sexaholic. I thought it was okay for men to be super sexualized, super wired all the time. I did not think it was okay for women. But I'm so grateful. I am extremely grateful to be a sexaholic because I never would have come across the steps. And it's a great way of life. In terms of the essay misconnection, I talk about a lot of acting out with myself. I talk about having a long-term affair outside my marriage with a woman, and I talk about dependency relationships, which are actually mentioned in our problem as a way of acting out. In fact, we read the problem yesterday at a meeting, and I couldn't believe it just jumped out at me. Early on, disconnected. We tuned out with fantasy. And then masturbation. We drank in pictures, images, pursued objects of fantasy. And then we moved on to physically acting up, dependency relationships, more fantasy. An unhealthy dependency is when I seek for all of my emotional needs to be found in somebody else. If there's a little bit of overlap with codependency, I'm not trying to control somebody's addiction. I'm not trying to control their life. In fact, I was reading last night, the word codependency came about in the mid-80s. Roy wrote the book in 84. So it may have just been coming on board. He was talking about dependencies. I was going to count in our book. I didn't. My guess is there are many more times, maybe twice, three times as many, that the book does talk about dependencies. And this is how my sexaholism has incredibly manifested itself. The affair that I had with the woman, I was extremely dependent on her. I wasn't happy in my marriage. I wanted someone to listen and take time with me, want to be with me. She actually groomed me for 5 years, which I didn't realize. She had a bunch of women along the way, so she could be patient. But when I realized what she wanted was sex, I was afraid if I said no, that I would lose her. I saw her as someone who met all of my needs. If I was out of town, I'd call her 3 or 4 times on the phone. I mean, and this was before cell phones. I'd find pay phones. I was just so, so dependent on her. I did actually make the decision to act out with her because I didn't want to lose her. I couldn't lose that relationship. And of course, I'm a sexaholic. I loved it, hated it, loved it, hated it. I was able somehow quite quickly to break things off physically, which for me was just killing myself because I knew that she would leave and she didn't. But I stayed for 8 more years in a very, very emotionally abusive relationship. That's a dependency, an unhealthy dependency. And it's a misconnection. I seek in somebody else for the meaning of my life. To me, one of the best ways to describe my sexaholism is in the white book, Spiritual Basis of Addiction, on page 55, and it talks about the negative connection. Spiritual isolation is intolerable. We're made to be relational people. We're made to have families and extended families and communities, but we had misconnections. It seems that with all of our human drives, hunger, sex, thirst, power, the like, the most basic is what we call the person drive. And that's with a capital P, the drive to have union with another, in other words, with our higher power. This drive must have its connection. And this is amazing to me. Without this essential core of our being plugged in somewhere, life is unbearable. We just can't live alone. With this plug of our soul dangling, we can't survive, cut off and disconnected. But I used people to or persons to satisfy what was essentially a spiritual drive. I let people take the place of God as source of my life. I came into SA in 1993. That was the psych hospital experience. I didn't realize. I hope my dog is not making too much noise and the door closed and everything, but didn't realize it was about lust. Apparently didn't read the first step, going to a meeting a day for a year. But I didn't want to give up lust. Once I remembered, I did not want to give up lust. And some of you may know the name Mike C. in Chicago. I was at a marathon that he spoke, where he spoke. I was in a small group with him, and I said, I don't want to act out, but don't take away my lust. And after lunch, the first thing he said from the mic, it chills me to my bones what I just heard. I heard someone say, I don't want to act out, but don't take away my lust. And for me, when I lust, when I choose to lust, I will act out. Maybe not right away, but eventually I will. The second relationship that I'll describe is a relationship with my granddaughter. There was no inappropriate sexual behavior, but I saw the whole reason for my being alive was to be her grandma, to love her. I was her sole caregiver from birth. And families are natural. A grandmother-granddaughter relationship is natural and special. But for me to have all of my needs met by this little tiny baby, and then as she grew till about 3 and a half, when our relationship due to family circumstances was cut off, I could hear myself say one day, Allie, Allison, Allie is my life. And I could, something's not right here, which is the same red flag I had with the woman that I was in the dependency relationship. I remember asking my husband, do you mind that I'm spending so much time with her? And he said, no, not at all. So I figured, well, I guess it's okay. But it's important for me to recognize those red flags. So circumstances, I'm seeing her every day, 8-10 hours to not at all. And I call it, she was ripped out of my life. I call it the Allison thing. For years and years and years, even until this last spring, I didn't realize I was so focused on myself and my needs to have all of my emotional needs filled by her that I didn't even think about 3.5-year-old having, you know, her grandma, I mean, I basically was her mom, ripped out of her life. That's selfishness. That's unhealthy emotional dependency on my part. But again, it was a matter of me not being happy in a marriage. I wanted someone who wanted to spend time with me, who wanted to be with me, who enjoyed me. And I looked for to plug into my life, into my granddaughter. Fortunately, real soon after that, I had a back injury, and I was on basically on bed rest in my home for 3 years. So it was 6 years total that I did not see my granddaughter. And I guess that's, 6 years. I did spend, and I'm very grateful, that time. I had lots of time to learn to plug my soul into my higher power. It was a very special time. And I believe that's part of what helped me to begin to let go of that particular dependency. But I still, for the longest time, I mean, I remember saying, I lost my faith. I lost my faith in God. I didn't stop believing in God, but I lost my faith in God. And I remember thinking, you know, if you want to teach me something, you can find another way. God, you always promise there would not be too much. This is way too much. I can't handle this. You want to use this? Use it in me, in another person's life. I never, ever, ever could find a reason. And that was like 2006. 2006, this past spring. So now we're up to 2020. I was very blessed to be able to take a trip to Israel and share about the message of SA in different meetings all around the country. One of my sponsees, and she knows I talk about dependency relationships, all of a sudden she was saying, you know, I think with COVID, it's kind of like that with my granddaughter. You know, I used to see her all the time, and now I don't because we got the restrictions, and I'm feeling so depressed. And I think that I was finding so much of the meaning in my life as being her grandma. And then I ended up having to leave the country very suddenly, but less than 24 hours before I left, there was an impromptu women's SA meeting in the home where I was staying. I just, you know, we listed our MOs, just listed dependency relationships. And one of the women questioned, you know, what's that all about? Talked about my relationship with my granddaughter. She started sobbing. She was a very religious Jewish woman, often with large families. She had a large family. And then she had what sometimes people call a change of life baby, where there was a 10-year gap between her youngest and then her last child, a son. And she just sobbed. She said, That's exactly what's going on with me and my son. Now, it took me a long time to realize that I would have been very destructive in Allison's life had I continued to be so needy and continued to have a relationship with her. And so I'm grateful God did for me what I could not do. At 3 years old, you know, God had to cut that off. And this woman at the meeting said, "I'm so glad you're sharing this. It hurts so bad, but I'm so glad because I think that could happen with me and my son, and I don't want that to happen." And all of a sudden, I don't know what, it was something clicked inside of me. It was, oh my gosh, you can actually use this for good. You know, to my heart, pardon. There's promises, 12 promises from AA. We'll see, no matter how far down the scale we've gone, we'll see how our experience can benefit others. Spending 3 years in a chair, like literally not leaving the home, this is after I'm on bed rest for 3 years, is unmanageable. For me, that's unmanageable. For me, that's going down a long way. People don't think dependency relationships can do such a big deal. Heavens, I spent over $100,000 on this woman. That's going down, down the scale. I will see how my experience can benefit others. But the one about, we will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. And it's really hard. I mean, you can see I get emotional when I think about it. But having seen now the effect, the way God can use that through me in other folks' lives has just been amazing. Just now, I thought about Spain and how grateful I am to Spain. There was an international convention a couple of years ago in person, thankfully. And for the first time, I really caught a world vision for SA. And I dove into sponsorship. I met one of my sponsees for the first time, a young woman from Israel, met several others from Israel. Fortunately, I'd broken my foot. So after the convention, I couldn't go. You know, everybody went out to a restaurant in town. I couldn't go. And the folks that were eating kosher food didn't go into town. And so I met a core group of wonderful women who just loved me to pieces. And I ended up in Israel sharing the message of SA with not just women, but folks all over the country. What a gift. What a huge gift. I'm trying to see how I'm doing here. The dependency relationship that stays with me currently, that I struggle with currently, is a relationship with my husband. I seek from him to meet all my emotional needs. I do everything I can. I've done everything I can. And I have finally gotten to the point to realize there isn't anything I can do. But he's not a relational person. He's not a touchy-feely person, an emotional person. And he doesn't meet those emotional needs of mine. And I end up in resentments. I mean, to this day, it sounds so strange taking a hit off of a resentment, being addicted to resentment. Like, how could I possibly do that? But it's like the White Book talks about. I play the scene over and over in my mind, as if in a courtroom, and I win the case every time. But that doesn't do me any good. That doesn't help my life. It doesn't help my program. And something I heard just a couple of days ago on a meeting. The problem is, when I leave the situation, let's say something would happen to my husband. I mean, he's in his 70s. He's not in good health. I still have me. I still have me with me. And it's something I need to deal with every single day, turn over. Resentment is the number one killer of addicts. It will kill me. Just like lust will kill me, it will lead me to lust because my lust is my go-to. when I'm struggling with something. You know, just yesterday, I thought of something a program friend has shared with me, the thought of, she calls it tick marks, but it's choosing an attitude. And for me, it would be resentment towards my husband. And every time that crosses my mind, to put my knee down, pray a short prayer, and then I've prayed so I, could cross off that tick mark. And I feel like I'm being challenged to do that. I haven't done that yet. That's where I am today. But that may help. The other thing that has absolutely helped, I don't remember if just now, it was before the meeting. I really don't like to talk in front of big groups, but I'm going to be sharing it in a marriage meeting, EMER meeting. And what I'm planning to share there is, thank you, Daniel, the prayer that I used, the prayer outline that God led me to in the last article in Recovery Continues. And the title of that article is The Essay Misconnection. I misconnect with myself. I misconnect with my God when I say I believe in you, but I can't trust you. I just can't trust you. That's a step. You know, we talk about bring the body and the feelings will follow. I mean, this is something I'm challenging myself to this day. I still, with the Allison thing that happened 14 years ago, I still have trouble on a minute by minute, basis, trusting God. You know, something that just crossed my mind, lust. Roy used to talk about progressive victory over lust. And we talk about layers of an onion, where we're aware of more and more things. Something that didn't bother us in the beginning just was a deeper level of center to lust. That's progressive. Progressive is not in the moment. In the moment of temptation, it's yes or no. And so for me, in the moment of temptation, one day at a time, and part of my home group's available here to keep me accountable, I can, when I spot it, stop, pray, surrender that resentment. I've got to surrender that resentment or I'll act out, and I don't want to act out again. They say that your addiction progresses. They say that if you pick up, if you have a period of sobriety and then pick up, you don't pick up where you left off. You pick off down the road. It took me 6 years to get sober. I mentioned that about not wanting to let go of lust. Sober in 99, 2004, a friend in Israel asked me to come over and show her how to work the steps. And this is just why I don't like speaking to a larger group. I'm thinking, oh, great, Nancy, I can do this. I'll show her how to work the steps. Well, long story short, I got hugely involved with lust there. She was in her own lust hangover. She looked at me. She goes, Nancy, you can't help me one bit. You're drunk on lust, which I was. Didn't act out right away, but did act out towards the end of that year. This time it was in public. I was in my van, but the van doors were wide open. I thought it was crazy enough, thought it was more exciting. I was next to a school. I was next to sports fields where different sports teams were playing. I was coming to pick up my son. I could hear him coming with his friends. I'm thinking, oh, wait, I can finish this up. There's stands of parents watching. And on the other side of the school is a police station, and the police circled the block. The consequences of that, I just can't even imagine to myself, but to my family, to my children. I can't lust. I'm addicted to lust. I can't lust. I'm grateful to be a sexaholic. I'm grateful to be aware of dependency relationships because they can affect other people's lives. I'm grateful to Spain for being here and for helping show me how amazing service is, how amazing sponsoring is. And I just thank you all for being here and listening to my story. And I'll pass.
Very much for your service, Tanya, and for the meeting. And thank you very much for your share, Nancy. I love listening to you, and thank you for everything you said. When I came to SA in 2016, it was because I was in a dependency relationship, and I thought that SA is not necessarily for me. I thought that the sobriety definition was meant for men. I was so confused. I just didn't understand. But I had tried literally everything to get out of this dependency relationship, and nothing worked. I had therapy for several years. I went to a treatment center. I went to codependency 12-step program. I had hypnosis, everything. But it was on and off, and to the point where I almost killed myself or wanted to kill him. I mean, it was really, and like you, I spend lots of money. And I think that it is one of the most emotionally destroying things that can happen. And I'm so grateful for SA, for the sobriety definition, because it helped me to get out of contact with that man, because I couldn't stay sober if I had any form of contact with him. And I also realized, like you, that if I would pick up again, I would end up worse or start at a worse point than I had left off, because I met him by accident, like 3 years into recovery. Thank you for the time. And it was just the emotion that these people cause inside. It's a turmoil. Just seeing them from afar, or sometimes the car, it can trigger. And it also says in the white book, to be addicted to a person like to a drug, it has the same effect, if not stronger. So I totally identify. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Katrine. Do you want to comment there?
Go ahead, insidious.
It's very insidious. And you mentioned another fellowship. I also thought that another fellowship would fit. But I remember at the psych hospital, they talked about 90 and 90. There wasn't a daily meeting. And I asked them, there must be more meetings, which they told me, but they said there's one you don't want to go to. They'll tell you what you have to do. And of course, it was this fellowship. Me as a good addict, this is one I had to check out. But as soon as I walked in the door, I knew this is where I belonged. Thanks.
Thanks, Nancy. Buddy, you're up next.
Thanks, Nance. I'm Buddy. I'm a recovering sexaholic in Philadelphia. Hey, Nance, I really liked what you had to say about resentment. I like that expression, resentment corrodes the container. I want to resent my trauma therapist. I've been working 2 years with some sexual abuse, physical neglect, a whole lot of stuff. And 15 minutes into my session 2 weeks ago, my trauma therapist threw me out of the office. Not very professionally. And then sent me an email and dumped me as a client. It's basically called patient abandonment. And I want to resent. And I've been praying on this every day to try to understand. And the best I can figure it out is that my illness pulled her in to my PTSD rather than her being able to pull me out into a place of healing. And my sponsor told me, like, don't try to contact her, just pray for her and give her the time she needs to heal. And I'm really, really working hard on that, because resenting her and trying to get an answer from a sick person we know that doesn't work. So thanks. And it's great to hear you again. Thank you so much, Nance.
Thanks, buddy. It's really good to see you too. The prayer outline that I pray from SA Misconnection, they talk in the big book about pray for 2 weeks. To me, that didn't work. But I'm in bed rest. I'm stuck. So I prayed every day for 3 months. And it absolutely relieved the resentment. But I've not heard that corrodes the vessel. Yeah, thank you very much for that. The container, thanks.
Thanks, everybody, and Nancy. Let's see, Aisling, you're up next.
Hi, my name is Ash, I'm a sexaholic. It's a great listening to you, Nancy. What came up for me is a misconnection with women. When other, like a 12 and 13, when other children were getting, you know, learning to socialize with each other and getting boyfriends, I was connecting with women on porn sites. I can't remember ever not having porn in my life. And those women were everything to me. They were my soulmates. They were my teachers. They were my comfort. You know, I idolized them. And today, if groups of women walk past, you know, straight away, the misconnection. I Googled recently what connection was. It was like a flow of current. So I'm walking along and I have, you know, that current and connected to God because I pray and meditate. And then a group of women might walk past that reminds me of them women, and the connection is gone. That's it, completely gone. And I am just dependent on them to fix that deep, deep sense of unworthiness that's inside of me. They were going to fix me and make me whole. These women were gods and are gods. But now I realize, you know, I look at them and like, these women are not gods. You know, I have to say to myself, you know, bring that current, bring that connection back again, that these are only women. You know, these are, you know, not idols. And yeah, So that's really, you know, the porn has. I was one day recently on a meeting and I saw a woman and I had this thought, I'd love to put her in a jar and just have her in my house. You know, like the covetousness in that, you know, underneath the lust is that just possession of women to fix me. So today I'm in a place where I know women are women and God is God. So I'm just, the connection is so spiritually tied. Porn has spiritually destroyed my life, but again, SA has reclaimed it for me. And I know, you know, one day at a time, women are no longer my connection to make me whole. My relationship with God is. So great to hear you. Thank you.
Thanks, Ashley. It's interesting, on page 55, the very bottom of that particular section about addiction, it says idolatry. And that's exactly when you mentioned that, idolatry. The one thing that just, I think, first jumped out at me before I've discovered page 55 in the problem, and my book fell, but we cry with outstretched arms, fill me up and make me whole. And that is just so key to me. Thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah, thank you. Yochanan, you had your hand up earlier. Would you like to go ahead?
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. My name is Yochanan. I'm sexaholic. And thank you very much, Nancy. It's very good to see you here. And thank you for your honesty. I very much identify with a lot of things, especially the depending on others in not the right way. I wanted to ask you. You said that sometimes you have problem to trust God, or to believe that to trust Him, and sometimes I have this problem also, and. I wanted to ask if when you have it, if you are doing certain things to help yourself, or you just wait for it to get over and you do other things. Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Yochanan, and it's good to see you. Well, one thing that crossed my mind when I say I didn't trust God, I mean, during those 6 years, my faith tradition is very important to me. And I did not go to church on the two major holidays, my faith tradition. I just could not trust God. Sometimes it's something little. Like today, I don't like to know ahead of time what I'm going to say. I really don't. My sponsor taught me, you know, what it's like, what happened, what it's like now. Don't write it down. And I knew that if I stayed home, I would be thinking about it. I actually meant to count the number of times dependencies. I thought, no, Nancy, don't focus on this. So I went and did service. I just went out and did service. So that takes my mind off of it sometimes. Sometimes it's a matter of, you know, bringing the body, the feelings will follow. I literally, when I went back to church, I chose to wear sunglasses because I was always crying. I was always crying, God, I just can't trust you. And so sometimes it's like that. I also tend to be very spontaneous, and God's amazing. When I see some of the things that God provides for me, like the trip to Israel was just absolutely amazing. So I can thank God for that part of my personality that I'm just, it's hard. It's a challenge. It's hard. The service has really helped a lot. And that's what's really made a difference in my recovery, literally since Madrid, is I jumped way up in service. And that's made a huge, huge difference. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Thanks, Nancy. If you have fewer than 30 days, go ahead and raise your virtual hand and get in the virtual queue. And then now we have Federico up.
Thank you, Daniel. And thank you, Nancy. Very much appreciated your share. It really went to the heart, I have to say, for me. And I had just a quick question, though. I was really interested in what you said about sort of spending your time now trying to plug in to your higher power. Could you maybe say just a few words about how that looks in your life, maybe what you do, something along those lines? Thank you.
Sure. And actually, that was the one question that I was hoping wouldn't come. But thank you. I like what you said. What does it look like? Because I'll talk to sponsees about how important it is to spend time with higher power, but it can look like different things. These days, I choose to spend about half an hour almost every day at the place of my faith tradition. That doesn't feel so much like I'm spending time with God, like that time when I was in bed rest and I just felt so connected. If I listen, yesterday we had a gigantic rain. I was at my church and I could hear a creek that fills up. For me, water and sky and earth, when they combine, so to give myself that, that's a way of me connecting. One thing I've done recently, I never learned, like old style AA, you know, get on your knees in the morning, get on your knees at night, pray. Why I never learned it, I don't know. But just recently, I'm thinking, I can't do this. You get into bed and I don't want to get out again. Well, I've been taking my cell phone, which I charge next to my bed, and I'm throwing it under the bed. Well, to get it under the bed before I go to bed, I get down on my knees. Oh yeah, I'm on my knees. I can pray. Now in the morning, I don't leave it in another room because I use it as an alarm. So I got to get up. Okay, now I'm on my knees. I can pray. So it's different tricks like that that help me a lot. Another thing that really helps is if I just sit quietly for 20 minutes, I call it mindfulness with God. So I'm, you know, very quiet. I don't close my eyes because I can dissociate, but I'm just relaxed, very aware of my surroundings. I don't pray specific prayers, but I'm very aware of God's presence. The step prayers are wonderful, wonderful, wonderful tool for me. Absolutely wonderful. So it looks differently than it did before. And I think sometimes I think I want it to look, you know, this real spiritual connection. But I've evolved in my recovery. I've discovered a great depth in my faith that I never had before. And I think what I like, I did not want your question because I'm thinking it does not look like it did before, but it looks different and that's okay. That's okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. In the chat, Francis has reported the dependency shows up 37 times in the white book. who are curious.
So now, Francis, you get to go back and you get to count how many times, like acting out, when he talks about sexually acting out. I'm curious to know that.
Okay. Next we have Suzanne from New York.
Hi. Thank you so much, Nancy, for sharing. And I too had a dependency relationship with a woman. And boy, it was severe. And I remember it was actually a situation where my job was threatened because she was a student and I was a campus minister. And so I blew myself in, which I knew would be the end of the relationship. And I tell you, it was so painful. I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And it was like cutting off my arm. I never had experienced a dependency relationship that deep. And so it's really important for me to be aware of that. Because I suppose the area where I can most struggle with that now, although thank God not to that degree, but is with you know, sponsee, that kind of thing. But I'm so grateful to SA and for the awareness. And I'm glad that dependency shows up 39 times in the white book, because sometimes you think, well, this isn't a lust issue, but it really is, because it's about taking. It's about, you know, wanting them to be your whole world and all that, or to meet all your needs. And yeah, I mean, that's definitely part of lust. So I'm grateful for that. So thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Suzanne. And I thought of a couple of things. I know I'm addicted because the withdrawal is terrible. But the other thing is Roy's definition of lust in the white book is taking something natural and using it for unnatural purposes. Grandma, granddaughter's natural. For me to get all of my needs sucked out of her and met, that's not natural. But thanks for sharing, yeah.
Thanks, Nancy. There is a woman on the chat who is interested in connecting with other women. So we have virtual coffee after this meeting, so that might be a good time to talk or exchange numbers or whatever, and I can facilitate that. So I just bring that up in the chat. Kathy, you're up.
Thank you, Daniel. Kathy, sexaholic. Thank you very much, Nancy. That is the story of my life. I haven't heard the story of my life so clearly told. I had an acting out partner for 12 years in my marriage. He was a man, not a woman, but I do get attracted to women, so I can understand that. But I even hated the sex we had. It was his idea of sex, not my idea of sex, not to get too graphic. But I did it because I thought he was rescuing me from a very unhappy, abusive marriage. And I stayed in that relationship 13 years. I've made my husband and parents ashamed of me. And I have a dependency relationship now. My whole life is full of dependency relationships to greater or lesser degrees. I have a dependency relationship on WhatsApp for the constant feed of understanding, approval and companionship, as the saying goes. And I'm having to even think of detaching from dependency relationships. That frightens me rigid. But I was very moved by what you said about not wanting to get rid of lust, and how the person said that was chilling him because it means acting out. And I've never got more than 26 days sober and 7 months in SA. It's usually a week or 10 days. And obviously something's got to change. I won't go on because we're very short of time. I just wanted to say, really tell the story of my life. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kathy. And what you said to me is very key. I was in SA for 6 years. and I didn't want to give up lust, realized it. And I actually, with my sponsor, prayed that I would give up my right to lust. 5 years later, I had the lust of, big Nancy, you know, I know everything. And that's when I gave away my sobriety again. So lust for me, I just have to be very aware of things. Thanks.
Thank you, Nancy. Lee, you're up.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much. It was a great, great talk. One of the primary things I heard you say was that aha moment when it became apparent that your problems were helping other people. And I had that before I got into SA, before I'd heard of SA. I was in drug and alcohol treatment, and the pressure of my sexual acting out was so tremendous that it erupted while I was there. And I just spewed out my whole sexual history, and it stunned people because nobody had ever heard that. I had never done it. But what I realized is that person after person after person wanted to talk to me privately after I did that. We went for walks. They told me stories. And I realized this is a good thing. I got the same thing when I came to my first SA meeting. And it was really healing to feel that. And then later, I found it in the big book of AA. And then on page 124, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. That has been one of the most powerful lines in the big book that I know, and it revolutionized my attitude towards sponsorship and sharing in meetings, because then I start getting my dark past into something useful. I don't know if you experienced that, but that's the way it's happened to me, and it's been profound and life-changing. So I thank you for sharing that aha moment. It was really good to hear. That's all.
Thanks, Lee. Can you repeat the page number in the big book?
Yes, it's in the family afterwards on page 124.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't have any virtual hands up at the moment, so you can just speak up if you have something you'd like to share or a question you'd like to ask or simply a comment.
Nancy, just for your information, sexual acting out 3 times, acting out 37.
Acting out or so acting out is the same as dependency?
Acting out is 37 times, yeah.
Okay. But half the time, that's not bad for someone who thinks I should be part of another program and not this one.
Hi, Laura here, sexaholic. I just want to thank you so much, Nancy, for your beautiful story. And I realized listening to your story that I was more willing to put down lust, but don't take away my dependency on others. And I realized that that's been one of the hardest habits to break, and the withdrawals are excruciating because I have to let the cord dangle for a little bit in order to plug it into God. And that withdrawal period is one of the most excruciating times. And yet I'm grateful for this program and for the discussion on dependency, because I don't think I would have been as addicted or needed lust if it wasn't for dependency. So, yeah, and the failures that it provides, right? It doesn't work. So I needed lust to escape. So thank you so much for your beautiful testimony.
Thank you, Laura. And thank you for being a beautiful person in my life.
Love you, Nancy.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.